Alvin?
Alvin?
Alvin!
Alvin!
I was an adult before I realized that in the song he wants a hula hoop. And I always wondered what a hula hoop was.
Yep, well, I mean...
Enunciate when you sing, people. Anyway, hello and welcome to...
I know what hula is. It's one of those little critters from Whoville that does the hula.
That's far better than me talking about a Netflix competitor. Well, fantasy Netflix, because we're playing D&D this evening. Hello and welcome to Cause and Effect. That's what we call a transition. Uh-huh. This is a homebrew Dungeons & Dragons campaign. My name is Crash. I will be your DM or GM for the evening, depending on who you ask. Tonight, I'm joined by a bunch of awesome people, including Beth, Ellie, and Eo. And what happened last time?
We uncovered a plot to frame an extremely annoying kitten for doing terrible things instead of just being a moderately terrible kitten.
For the record, I am not a kitten. I am simply petite.
You're smaller than I am.
Yes, that's what petite means.
You overgrown fur bag.
I'm not overgrown. I'm positively tiny for a tabaxi. I was malnourished in my childhood before I was adopted.
I am perfectly adapted for crawling into machinery and fixing things that could otherwise require hours of disassembly.
Did Ogmanite freeze you as a kitten?
No.
Did Ogmanite reverse your growth?
No. And I am an Ogmanite.
That doesn't mean that you couldn't have been reversed.
Well, I wasn't. This is just how
I am. Okay, if you're sure.
I've heard this happens a lot. There's a dragonborn running around out there that's just the same.
Furry?
No, dragonborn aren't furry, but there's a petite dragonborn out there, I've been told. Haven't really met
him. Lives in the plain of Canada, you say?
Kobold Forge World, actually.
Poppy is disbelieving.
Well, yes, and
for the listeners
turns out...
at home, Hobby is played by the player of that character. Yes. Oh,
which
no,
makes
this
it
isn't
even funnier.
A recap anymore. Sorry.
No. This is a between episode discussion that we'll say happened while you're waiting for pickup or something or other. But this is the intermission episode. You have all leveled up, and various specialists have been sent in to the mining town that was massacred. And upon investigation by people who are more skilled in that than beating down highly skilled and powerful opponents, it is determined that it was most likely an accident. The townsfolk weren't maliciously killed. They were killed because there was a more powerful storm than usual that... sent some of the lightning elementals far and wide. Some of them ended up in the vicinity of the town, and what the lightning elementals will frequently do is use their lightning-based attacks to end lives, and they actually get some level of sustenance from that. They get more sustenance from getting struck by lightning, which is why they liked hanging around the top of a mountain called Stormbrew Mountain. There was a microclimate. There were a whole bunch of Sith that were, like, making summer homes there because it felt like a home away from home.
Hobby is still extremely suspicious about the coincidental nature of we show up and everybody's dead.
Well, it was certainly a coincidence, but your suspicions are not helped by the fact that Ignatius Frankenmug, which is his name, seems to have zero empathy for others.
Someone needs to be picked up by a scruff and put somewhere in an empathy machine. Can the Ogmanites make that?
The argument might be made that as someone with zero empathy for others, Ignatius is more cat than you are.
No. There are plenty of cats who have empathy for others. It's empathy for humans that can be iffy.
Well, it was mostly humans who were killed. Yeah.
They uplifted a cat. That's not a tabaxi, that's a cat.
Well, a major concern is that Ignatius somehow got his furry little paws on a juror. And the juror was not as deactivated as was claimed. And it walked off with a bunch of Modrons. Now, Modrons, when they are reduced to zero hit points, tend to melt away, not unlike what happens to Celestials or Fiends, where they go away and then re-solidify in some way, shape, or form on their home plane. The essence of a Modron doesn't turn into another Modron directly, but it is recycled in a factory that churns out another monodrone. Specifically monodrones, because an existing monodrone gets promoted if there's a vacancy higher up. If you want to examine a dead Modron, and if you're trying to figure out how they tick, examining a dead one is far easier than examining a live one because they tend to fight back a lot. Doing so on their home plane of Mechanus is a bit of a problem because that's where the Modrons live. That's where the Modron god is. And they would take issue with you doing this.
Yeah.
So the ones that were in Ignatius's lab in a stasis field were in a relatively easy to access location. And I understand I'm saying this about a fortress on top of a mountain surrounded by giant robots, killer lightning storms, and the occasional random lightning strike. That was an easier to infiltrate location.
The Mechanus? Definitely.
Yes.
Yep. Exactly. Yep.
So now Sklora's got a bunch of Modron corpses.
Yep. And Sklora, it sounds like, is behind putting in a so-called defeated juror. Possibly by putting one of her own jurors in a big cloak and saying, here, give this, you know, Trojan juror to that lunatic little kitten there. Mildly surprised that she didn't just stomp in with a bunch of her dwarf brain jurors and make off with them, but I suppose it might have been damaged in any fighting and they would have all dissipated.
I mean, there was that possibility. There's also the possibility that Sklora was busy stomping in and doing something somewhere else. So she delegated in this particular case. It was considered a lower priority mission or something. But also, Sklora is something of a sociopath who has only barely attempted to follow societal norms. So specifically trying to get into her head and determine her motivations is...
tends to fail.
It is a bit more difficult to do that for her than many other individuals. Plenty of villains can be reasoned with, be bargained with. Sklora is more of a wild power.
Card. Yeah, she got too much power, so bargaining with her is like...
a lot of power. A lot of power after spending untold eons, literal eons, being the bottom rung of the totem pole in the domain of dread that was formed around her.
And this is why you should not keep people on bottom rungs, because they tend to treat everyone else like they're on a bottomer rung when they can.
There is that, but Sklora also doesn't seem to be revenge motivated.
I mean, she already got rid of all the people who she would have wanted revenge on, or we did for her.
But also, have foiled some of her plans, and she hasn't decided to come after you specifically.
Probably.
You do keep running into her, but also so do a lot of other people. For example, there's a shark god that ran into her. It didn't enjoy the experience.
Probably was trying to chew on her.
It might have made the attempt, yes. Ellie has commented in chat, shark god juror. Let me open my note program. Typing something in. Don't mind me. Just typing in a note. Okay. Moving on. I mean, the shark god's essence has already been used up. She combined it with the essence of a kraken and had you play with it for a bit. That went very well.
There's some value of very well.
Well, yes. It went very well for the party because the party won. It went very well for Sklora because she gathered data.
Yeah, that's kind of a...
Didn't gather Lore, though. Lore's still MIA.
Lore's the worst one.
That's why she wanted Data, the objectively better android.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right. So, having gone over the recap and provide additional context, your potential quests on the board, and in a little bit I will be asking you what you're doing between now and when you start the next arc. You could once again retrieve an item for Mo, because there is always an item for Mo that can be retrieved. Cavill has done more of these than anyone else. You can end whatever Augmentite experiment went horribly wrong this time. This is also repeatable.
I think we already did that again. I mean, repeatable, yes, but I think that's what we just came back from.
This is why it's repeatable. Because, like, the Augmentites don't even send people over to say, hey, could you solve this problem for us? Anytime someone picks up the quest, they're just sent over to the Enclave. Go up to the front door and Kevin says, oh, wonderful, you're here just in time, and sent you to whichever fire is the brightest right now. And yes, canonically, Kevin is still working the front desk. Kevin is always working the front desk. This one might argue that Kevin is always working the front desk because it keeps Kevin away from the other Augmentites. This is true. Most of them can't stand Kevin.
Kevin is the front desk.
Wouldn't that mean that I'm putting my feet up on me? Kevin begins to have an existential crisis about whether or not the desk is a Kevin from this world.
Could be. Dun, dun, dun.
Turns out the Kevin in another world was actually a treant who was harvested for its wood and turned into the front desk. There's also Defeat the Baroness of Kavreem, which you've seen that quest before. It's been taken down. It's been put up again. So apparently the Baroness keeps coming back.
Either that or people keep failing.
Ellie has put in the chat, repeatable. Yes.
Well, if it's getting taken down, then presumably they're allegedly succeed. Well, it says defeat, not kill. So maybe she's like the Augmentites.
There is a rumor that the longest stint where it was down was because the Baroness was on vacation.
Is the Baroness putting these up? Says Hobby to, like, no one in particular.
A random adventurer walking by just shrugs and then continues on.
Is this one of those, like, cursed to never be able to do something unless defeated? Cannot have lunch unless defeated? Cannot have a good night's sleep unless defeated?
Oh my gosh, that would be a horrible curse. You will not be able to get a good night's rest unless you are defeated in combat. Also, I've made you more powerful than anyone else.
On the other hand, if you've had no sleep, then you're probably easier to defeat, so...
I am looking something up here. Give me here. Okay. So, I would like you to give me an investigation check. Your investigation score is higher than your history score, so I'm going with investigation.
Oh, just Hobby.
Yeah. Well, Hobby's the one asking the question.
Hobby
with
rolled
a 25. So... what you find is that you can't get a straight answer. There are so many rumors about the Baroness. There are people who claim they've met the Baroness, and they will give different conflicting accounts about who the Baroness is, what she looks like, what her power levels are, what her skills are, what the tower looks like. I mean, Kavreem, people know where Kavreem is. You can find it on the map. Roughly, it's over there somewhere. Not everyone who's an adventurer passed geography in school. But everything else about it is different.
The tower in the middle of a field of mushrooms? Hallucinogenic mushrooms?
Is she a high-level bard?
That could do it.
The stories, and again, this is with a 25. Mm-hmm. The stories that you've gotten from people who say they've done the quest are that the Baroness is a warlock, a sorcerer, a wizard, a bard, a lich, a high-level fighter, a cleric, of which god, you've heard several. Oddly, not Agma. Agma is one of the few gods where, like, no, couldn't it be Agma?
Is the quest to go there?
Has been heard several times.
Bobby is now going, is the quest to go there and draw a combination of rumors from a hat and come back and spread them?
With your 25.
I rolled a 19.
You do not. Yes. And exactly. With your plus 6 bonus, that makes it a 25. So I'm pointing out this high number so yes. that you're not hearing what I'm saying and think, well, I must have rolled too low.
Indeed.
Because I'm getting all these answers. You are getting these answers from people who, if you were just talking to one person, you'd be like, yeah, I got this. I know what's going on with this. And then you talk to the next person because trust but verify, and you get an entire different set of verifiably true answers.
Bobby's just writing these down now because this is entertaining.
Like, the battles against the Baroness have involved spell battles, hand-to-hand combat, a bunch of creatures being summoned, trying to find her in a maze of passages that seemed larger than the exterior of the tower that she's in.
Green circles.
One person mentions green circles. When you ask the next person about green circles, they begin to shudder and leave early to go have a conversation with their therapist, who is currently not available because the therapists are all on call dealing with a whole bunch of orphans from a mining town.
Hopefully we can get at least a few of the parents back.
Ah, yes. Well, I have told you 4 of the quests on the board for your particular cohort level. The 5th quest is shiny and new, freshly engraved on the little metal placard that is hung up. Cogbucket would like a significant number of high-quality diamonds.
Let me get out.
I think we have something of a responsibility to take that one.
This is also the newest quest on the board. So, of course, it's the one that I've done the least prep for.
Of course.
That's what makes it fun. And Beth has found a gif of a cat that is orange and pleading. Wide, round eyes looking up at the camera as if to say, pets? Food? Pets and food? Scritches?
Hello?
Pets, food? Maybe a syringe of water?
Oh, God. Ew, you've got pictures of that one.
For the record, Beth and Eo have a cat that, for reasons involving medication, has gotten used to being fed water through a syringe, not with a needle stuck to the end, but just...
He's not the one who was being medicated either.
No, he was. He was being medicated. He had to take an antibiotic for his constant congestion turned into sinusitis. So he got medicated with a antibiotic that it's bad if it doesn't go all the way down. It irritates the esophagus lining. So he had to have a syringe of water after he had the pill. And now he demands a syringe of water. Yep.
I thought that he just saw other cats getting medication.
Nope.
And
nope, we had to give him that, and it turned out, I mean, he hated getting the pill. We had to put him in this kitty straitjacket that, you know, for like grooming and whatnot, and he'd still try to thrash his head back and forth, and we poked the pill down him, and then we give him the syringe, and he'd go, and he'd hold still, and he'd go, and it's like, okay, do you like this? And then we started giving him a syringe of water without binding him up, and it turns out that all I have to do is like cup his head to hold him still, get the syringe in there, start squirting, and then I can let go of his head, and he just stays there going lick, 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 and sounding like a horrible gurgling drain sometimes. In any case,
the syringe of water has been added to the menu of the Quest Hub Bar and Grill.
Oh no.
For some reason, it was being requested by a lot of tabaxi.
It's a squeeze bottle. It's fun.
Mork and Mindy, the proprietors of the Quest Hub Bar and Grill, who are both orcs, this has been said before, but it's been a while, so I'm saying it again, don't understand the appeal at all, but that's the case for half the things they serve on their menu.
Mm-hmm.
It's got good mouthfeel, apparently.
Apparently. They offer to put things that aren't water in the syringe. Would you prefer a syringe of ale or a syringe of... fruit beverage. No. The tabaxi want water.
Or sometimes catnip tea. But mostly water, yeah.
Well, the catnip tea That's also preferred in a glass as opposed to a syringe. The syringe squirts it down your throat faster. You don't taste as much of it.
I mean, water... you put it in the side of your mouth and then you just sort of drink, squeeze and drink. You don't squirt it down the throat. You squirt it into the mouth. So, you know. Oh, darn it. I can't do the slurp, slurp, slurp.
This is a wonderful, wonderful digression that I'm going to say this conversation happens and it's canon. Between Hobby and other tabaxi about the etiquette of drinking water from a syringe.
Or broth or tea or whatnot. And in any case, well, there's pleading looks because we should go get a whole bunch of diamonds, shouldn't we?
Well, to pick up this quest, you know where Cogbucket's medical facility and barbershop is.
Does anyone object? Cavill gets the eyes.
I already said that I feel like we have a responsibility to do this.
I can see it now. Hobby says, all right, so I feel like we need to do this. Does anyone object? Anyone? Then Hobby looks and sees that the rest of the party is halfway to Cogbucket already. Well, except for A, who is one quarter of the way, looking back and motioning for Hobby to follow.
Boing, boing, boing.
I thought I heard Ellie speak up.
I did. I said, no, I don't object.
Oh, okay. I didn't actually hear
right.
all of
okay.
that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's...
Well, for the record, I did catch that. But Beth, having not caught it, had me second guessing what I heard. Okay. So, yes, there's a poing, 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 according to Beth in the chat, as Hobby leaps and bounds and scampers. There may be some scampering to catch
I'll
up with the rest
of the
party.
Scoop up A on the way to catch up as well, since, you know, A has little legs.
A was running on all fours to catch up, but then there's a, and then Hobby is running on all three.
Sling A on to Hobby's shoulders and scamper.
Okay. We fought with Foundry so much to make sure we would all be logged in. You know I need to make use of the fact that we can roll dice on this. I would like you to attempt an acrobatics roll at disadvantage. Because as a slightly less than average size tabaxi, you are not a mount.
Will 16 do it?
Well, that's a question for whether or not A can hold on. For A... I am not going to roll acrobatics. Animal
this
handling.
Is athletics. Oh no.
Oh no.
11.
So, at first you think it's going well. You scoop A up and toss them onto your back. And they stay there for several leaps and bounds. But they are in a slightly different position with each leap as opposed to each bound. They attempt to get a good grip. The one point where they do get a good grip, you do not agree with the grip because it's your ears.
No.
And then it's your, and then you flick your ears, A yelps and goes, sorry, and grabs hold again. This time it's your whiskers. A yelps and says, sorry again. There is a bounce, a roll, and for more of a distance than you would care to relive, A is trailing behind you, pulled by your tail.
Hobby will have to pause and say, why don't you get a good grip, and then we'll go the rest of the way.
Okay, but also here. We're here.
Oh.
This resolves itself, like you skid to a stop right in front of the door.
We need to work on our tumbling together.
Okay, but to make it actually work properly, I don't think you would agree to the saddle. And also, I would feel very uncomfortable.
Depends on sort of harness thing. If we get a harness, and you can throw the psychic daggers.
It wouldn't be physically uncomfortable. Well, that too. It would be emotionally uncomfortable.
But it might be funny.
Yeah, but I'm trying to not be the comedic reliefer character.
Well, no, because I'd be the one who'd be running around. And you could be the one who was there throwing the psychic daggers and then we run away again.
How about we table this discussion for the next intermission?
Okay.
All right. And you both go in where everyone else has already gone.
Uh-huh. The rogues are roguing again.
Everyone turns to see both of you walking in through the door. And Cogbucket's in there, of course. Cogbucket Jr. is they, them. Cogbucket Sr. is he, him. Because that's how he was built. So he is just finishing up with a customer who happens to be another Warforged, but they have a very stylish toupee. Well, please let me know if the adjustments continue to hold for the long term. I have applied what is referred to by some as a permanent, so hopefully it will remain so. Oh, but don't get it wet for the next week.
Thank you.
And the Warforged stands up and waves at all of you and walks out the door.
Wave back.
Hello, everyone. How may I assist you? Are you also here for a stylish toupee and or haircut?
We're here about the quest.
Actually, a mustache would be cool.
Cogbucket pulls out a mustache, peels a backing off of it, and sticks it to directly underneath A's snout and says, on the house.
Yay!
Gesundheit.
I was actually hoping that you would be the ones to pick up the quest, as, well, I imagine you already know why I might want a significantly large number of valuable diamonds.
Dot.
Well, we have some good guesses, yeah.
I do have some friends who can acquire them over time, but I thought that maybe expediting things would be beneficial. We are, of course, trying to help some small children cope with the loss of their parents.
Dot.
And some larger children as well. Well, apparently, significantly sized diamonds are getting harder to come by. This world has been filled by many spellcasters who have gotten powerful enough to bring people back from the dead, and so have been doing so for a large number of individuals, which has used up a significant amount of the naturally occurring diamonds, at least the ones that aren't being hoarded by others. So, I had to have another friend scry for a hoard. I think I found one. Ellie, and you believe giving them diamonds will soothe their pain. No. Well, yes, money heals all wounds. And also, no, the hoard is not in plantain. Oh, Ellie, even in chat, you are a gem. And I'm going to open up Texas character sheet and give you another luck point now.
The hoard is on the other side of the planet, isn't it?
Oh, it may have been, but currently is not. It's actually, I wouldn't say fairly close. It's almost on the other side of the planet. Let's just say it's on the other side of the continent. Are you familiar with Coomeridge?
No.
Oh. It is a delightful isolated community.
It is a familiar name, but I don't believe I've been there.
I lived there for a few years. It was quite nice, actually. It is a collection of small towns surrounded by mountains that keep it fairly isolated and protected. The main way of getting in or out is by going through a swamp, which makes it even more isolated and protected. That swamp is apparently the new home of a black dragon. Its home is new enough that, well, dragons will tend to find some means of shielding their hordes from scrying. After all, ragtag bands of adventurers do happen to approach dragons on the regular, but this one's new enough that the friend of mine was able to locate it before those wards were put in place.
Is this a dragon who's a problem dragon, or is this a dragon where we'd be doing a breaking and entering and feel very embarrassed after?
Well, I'm told that if it wasn't for the Lord of Coomeridge and a significant number of highly motivated kobolds, it would be raiding Coomeridge proper on the regular.
It's a nuisance dragon.
Well, to Coomeridge is a nuisance. To the outlying communities around those mountains, more of a problem. Black dragons are not known for being sociable. Not in a way that is appreciated.
Just checking. I mean, there's that red dragon majordomo for the... Never mind.
Ah, the Red Death of Plantain. Yes, we've met.
Yes. So, you know, seems like a reasonable, right, that.
There are many dragons who manage to step away from the stereotypes that usually imprison them. Others lean into it. Cut to Monty, sipping an herbal tea. Ignoring the camera completely.
It is unclear whether Monty is stepping away or leaning in.
Both.
Both, yeah.
Both is good. The herbal tea does not, in fact, have any spices added to it. It is not filled with hot peppers or anything, because Monty, not being a mammal, is immune to the effects of capsaicin.
I mean, it might be full of hot peppers because he likes the taste. That's something
I was told it would make it burn. There was no burn.
Alas.
Yes. And it turns out if you want to heat it to a temperature that I would appreciate, it melts most containers. I'm commissioning something from the Ogmanites, but I'm told attempts 3 through 5 had to be dealt with by ragtag bands of adventurers.
Oops.
Anyway, this isn't about me. Move along. Cut back to. So, essentially, we don't have the exact coordinates. It's somewhere in the swamp outside Coombridge. I'm sure most of the undead aren't there anymore.
I need to pop over to the artifact shop. Be right back. Hobby would like to know if there are any artifacts that can basically cast a constant prestidigitation to keep her fur from getting wet and muddy and horrible.
That sounds like an interesting thing, but usually something that constantly casts a spell backfires in spectacular ways. For example, with this specific example, imagine if you equipped this artifact, started using it, and it miraculously removed all moisture from you permanently.
I don't want all moisture removed from me, just from my fur.
Yes. And getting it to know the difference between your fur, which is part of you, and the rest of you, is tricky. And not many people want to test that.
Well, if you find... Also,
however,
you would not be able to groom yourself.
I could learn to live with that, especially if I could take it off.
Well, I do think I might have something for you. Now, it's not designed for this specifically, but I think it might help you out. Let me go to the back real quick. Give me a second here. Okay, so this is technically Quentin's used goods and consignment shop emporium. He is not an artificer. He's actually a wizard, but a low-level one, because he gave up learning magic to sell magic items. That was way more profitable, and he had to deal with fewer existential threats. Oh, wow. Cavill taking a long rest tells us all of the spell slots that Cavill gets back.
It tells you. It's not telling me. I should take a long rest, too, shouldn't I?
Oh. Well, it is telling me that Cavill got a whole bunch of spell slots back, and it also tells me how many charges Cavill got back on the Wands of Magic Missiles.
Oh, no. I set that up so
that
it would work.
That is neat.
Oh, I see my recovery one. Yep.
So, Quentin goes to a back room, and you hear some shuffling, some boxes being moved around, a hammer for a brief amount of time, then some more boxes being moved around, then the sound of a lot of things falling and crashing, and the sound of something circular rolling a distance, and then going into, imagine if you will, a plate rolling off and then doing that whole saucer rotating quickly thing as it comes to a rest. That is an uncomfortably long period of time where that's the only thing you hear. And then a beat later,
I'm okay.
Oh, good.
Most of those things were unbreakable.
Oh, no.
And Quentin comes out. There are shards of broken glass on his robe, and it is wet in places.
Oh, dear.
There's some parts that aren't anymore, but most of the damage is shards of broken glass and wet spots.
It ate through my sleeve. Fascinating. It shouldn't have been able to do that. Maybe it was a combination of the... Nope, not my problem. I'll file something with the supplier. Anyway, so here you go. And Quentin pulls out a rolled up piece of something that kind of looks like a rubberized fabric, gives it a shake, and it appears to be a onesie. It has gloves on the ends. It has feet. Like, the booties are built in, and there is a hood.
So, it might be just a little uncomfortable because there is no hole for the tail, and if you find something that can cut into this, well, that might cause more problems than it's worth because it might actually dispel the magic. But this is a wetsuit of dryness.
Hobby is going to take a very long look at this and is not entirely sure if this would not be worse.
I'm told that the material has been treated to make it hydrophobic. That's the term they used. I thought hydrophobic meant afraid of water. But apparently, the way it's described, the water is afraid of this. Observe.
And Quentin goes over to a mop and bucket that's sitting over to the side, along with a stack of several warning wet floor signs. Takes the whole thing, bunches it up, dunks it in the dirty mop water, counts to three, pulls it out, gives it a shake, and it looks like he didn't dump it in dirty mop water. It still is pristine. It's not even dripping.
How much is it?
1,000 gold.
I'll give it a shot. Having it around might be a good idea. I have deleted the gold.
All right. I will create a wetsuit of dryness for you and add it to your character sheet before I go to bed tonight.
Excellent.
Because I literally just invented it now.
Yep. Hobby has also spent 3 gold. 1 gold for, is this enough replacement fish for you? And 2 to start on the orphan fund, depending on how much is actually, how much a gold actually buys.
Wait, replacement fish?
You know, for the kitten.
He owes him sardines, remember?
Oh, yeah. As soon as you said for the kitten, I got the reference. But also, I'm going into your inventory and adding 1 more luck point.
Oh, thank you. Because you went poof.
So now you have 2.
And I will stop talking now for a while.
Okay. So that is what Hobby has been doing. Tex has interjected. But otherwise, I do want to know what Tex and... I almost said EO. What EO's doing is going to tell me what Cavill's doing eventually. But I would like to know what Tex and Cavill are doing.
You'll have to tell them which one first.
Tex is also browsing the curiosity shop, but hasn't made any decisions yet.
Okay. Picking up random curios and knickknacks, looking at them, trying to see the price, putting them back down again.
Yes. Probably also checking in on the submarine optimals.
They have been doing more low-level quests than higher-level quests of late, in part because they're down a person still, and in part because the quests for their level, like, they aren't getting filed. There's always the do something for the Augmentites and do something for Mo quests. Those are evergreen and an every tier level. But you can get very tired of solving the mistakes that should not have been wrought by science and supporting capitalism, which is essentially what those two categories are.
That's very fair.
It's how I designed them. So they could do the higher level ones, but there'd be way more risk of them not coming back from those, especially if they're down a person. And that person they're down was the de facto healer because their cleric worships a god that no longer exists. No one tell him. So they're doing lower level quests, but they're getting by.
Mm-hmm.
Their poor cleric. Has their cleric considered multi-classing?
No.
And I mean, there's multi-classing to a cleric of someone else, and then you could worship 2 gods?
They are in... Well, then you get into, well, who do you put your faith in? And there are people out there that pick a deity based on pragmatic options. Well, it'd be best if I put my faith in this person because they'd be able to help me in these situations. But there are others who have more personal reasons for why they are behind a certain deity. And therapy is freely provided as part of being an adventurer signed up with FLAG. And your characters would not know this. This is stepping out from behind the curtain to whisper this to the players. The problem that exists is when you are dealing with talking to somebody about their faith, helping them come to terms with the thing is incredibly difficult. It's a tough thing to walk around. You don't want to make the decision for somebody, but also, like, I'm glad I'm not a therapist.
Hobby would probably actually understand. Hobby grew up worshiping a dead god. Not as a cleric, but, you know.
But, and here's the thing. Their god is not responding.
Ah.
They're just nothing. Ostensibly, like, because you can be a warlock for a deity also. And warlocks have a different relationship with the deity than clerics do. You can be a warlock for a dead god and still have power because there's still some type of residue. This god, Argonia, isn't responding to anything. It is like they do not exist. And that is different than a god being dead. A dead god can come back. After all, Hobby, what did you call your god?
Twice dead.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
There can be something that comes back. Argonia doesn't exist. And for the followers of Argonia, that is so much worse.
Yeah. Hobby What's still would be sympathetic.
Oh, certainly. Certainly. And it is a sympathetic situation. That is 100% the player's fault.
Yep.
Not the characters, mind you.
No.
Also, you might not want to talk to Terry-ish about this. Because it would make your interactions with this person, like, very difficult. Oh, I'm so sorry your god doesn't exist. You know, I learned something about that. Oh, never mind. Never mind. I didn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
No. It's the my dad could beat up your dad thing. Only it's my god made your god cease to exist.
In
with a little help from some friends.
Yeah, well, I mean, things were happening, and sometimes gods make miscalculations.
Certainly. And my ADHD is showing. So I was in the middle of asking what Cavill was doing. And then we went off in a different direction, not letting Cavill answer. And I see what Ellie has written in the chat, and we will address that in a little bit.
Oh, right. Tex is still in the middle of hers.
Well, I'm going to say we address that in a little bit as my brain works to see what we're going to do with that. I have an inkling of an idea, and I'd like to be more than an inkling before I roleplay that. So I'm buying time by asking what Cavill's doing.
Cavill is going to see if anyone knows anything about the dragon we might be heading after, and specifically whether anyone might have anything that might be from where the dragon hangs out. Honestly, a shed scale or something might do.
All right. And we will address that in a little bit, but we're going to go back to Tex. I have a response for you, but I'm going to address the Tex situation first. So Tex is attempting to see if she can find a healer for the submarine optimals. So Tex, I'm going to ask if, actually, I'm going to double check a thing. My knee-jerk reaction is to have you roll investigation for this. But I want to look over your skills and see it. Because looking at the whole list of skills, I might see one here fits better for what I would like to do. Okay. So what I'm going to say is, you're going to roll investigation, but we're going to add 2 to the roll for your charisma bonus. Because that's going to help with this. Okay. Well, with an 18... Ah, and you spend inspiration. Ah. Well, I'm glad you spent inspiration because that was a 15 and a 2. Now, Ellie, did that include the plus 2 or were you adding that on top of it? No, either way, that's good. It's good either way.
That included the plus 2.
Okay. Well, 18 is enough. The 18 is more than enough. So it's not a matter of finding if there is a cleric out there. There are many clerics out there. There are some people who argue there's too many clerics, but then when you ask for follow-ups, they're talking about clerics of specific deities that they don't like because they oppose the deity that they are in favor of, whatever. The problem is finding a cleric who is interested in joining the Submarine Optimals. The ones you find, for the most part, aren't against the Submarine Optimals in particular, but they might be already in another party. They might not want to be adventuring. They might be not ready to commit to an adventuring party specifically. They prefer to freelance. It takes you, I'm going to say it actually takes you most of the day going around tracking down various individuals. And eventually, you leave the flag headquarters and go off into Flotsam, the town, to find this person, because they don't tend to hang out in Flag too much. Apparently they were getting bullied a little bit. You weren't given all the story because not everyone was willing to give you all the story and you were in a hurry. But eventually you find a kobold paladin.
Aww.
Who you were told is named Mox. They are at the docks and they are kicking their little feet in the water while people walk around them. Because
honest
they
to
are
goodness, I thought you were going to say they were kicking rocks.
Rocks is a different kobold.
And they're one of the swobolds.
You're sure they're
they
not bard?
Well, they might multiclass Cobard? Into bard later, but right Cobard. Now they are a barbarian.
Barbarians.
They could become
good.
A barbarian. Barbarian is a good combo. But they did visit Cogbucket and get a stylish toupee. Their stylish toupee is a mohawk. A punky spiked mohawk. However, that's not the kobold you're seeking out because barbarians are not known for healing spells. Paladins, however, are capable of doing stuff like this. So Mox becomes aware of you when a very large shadow appears over the tiny kobold and they look up at you silhouetted by the sun and go, "My, you're a tall one. You probably hear that a lot. Thanks for the shade."
"You're very welcome. If it's required or desired."
I could go either way, but I've learned to be thankful for what is given to me. What can I do for you?
"Well, I have heard that you are quite capable, and perhaps that although you have desired to be in Flag in the past, you are between teams at the moment."
I'm opening your character sheet again to ask you to make another roll. Give me an insight roll.
Is that...
With a 15... kobold's facial musculature is different from that of most humanoids, but you've spent enough time around A to know that, you just got the equivalent of a kobold's face darkening and a wall going up.
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
"I hear that there were some interpersonal difficulties with others treating you shamefully."
"They don't think I'm a real paladin."
"That is... Why would that be?"
"Because I took a correspondence course to become one."
"Each of us learns in their own way. I don't see what you taking a correspondence course has to do with you being a paladin."
"Well, paladins are supposed to, like, serve a powerful deity and go and learn from that deity and the followers of that deity how to do the things and the lay on hands and the casting spells and the smite and all this stuff. And I just, mailed in a flyer and then did a questionnaire. I read a few pamphlets. And I learned a lot from them, I did. But I found a god to follow then, after all that."
"So, to be clear, you know all of the things that a paladin ought to know. And you follow someone or something that gives you power and inner strength. Is that correct?"
I think most of my strength comes from the god I follow. I'm just a kobold. We're cannon fodder. We're the ones that people go into the sewers to wipe out because we're an infestation. At first level, whatever that is. I'm told that's fourth wall stuff. I don't know what that means. We don't have inner strength.
I have seen my kobold friend take down creatures many times their size. I think perhaps I would like to propose something to you, if you are amenable.
Mox scoots over and pats a space on the dock next to them.
Tex will sit down.
The various dock workers now have to walk around two individuals sitting at the dock instead of just one. They do not complain because when a giant murder bot is in the way, you walk around them or you stay away from them. Those are your options. Tex might be sympathetic to them, but they are not asking.
I have some friends who are struggling as well. They're the person who was healing their party turned out to be a betrayer who was only present in order to attack an unrelated person. That person is the betrayer, I mean, no longer with us. Also, there was a giant sheep involved.
Did this happen in Coomeridge?
Did it happen in Coomeridge?
Yes, it did. It happened at Meepo's farm.
Oh, then I have been there.
It's been a while, though.
I suppose it did. I should go correct myself to Cogbucket. Anyway, since then, they have been struggling. They find difficulty performing the task of being a flag adventuring group. They are adrift.
I know
that.
Can
I tell you something?
Sure.
I did not study to become a paladin. I do not follow a god. I simply am. I think perhaps the people who have been less than kind to you may not have been living up to the standards that paladins should strive to exceed.
Well.
But I think my friends would enjoy meeting you. Would you like to meet them?
Sure.
Very well. If you would like, I can give you a ride back to headquarters. And we can arrange that now.
No offense, but I think I'm going to walk. I feel uncomfortable riding another person.
All right. And we are going to put a pin in this plot line and move back to Cavil. And I had a plan for Cavil, and I've totally forgotten what that thread was.
So we need to find the lair of a dragon that is bent on being a nuisance. I have the spell, and that spell would be find the path. Now, some of the components are simply a bit expensive, but I can buy those. That's fine. In fact, I will go buy those right now. I definitely have more than 100 gold pieces in my inventory. But the other component that it requires is an object from the location you wish to find.
Well, this unfortunately creates a problem, or it is a problem. The problem was already created. If this was the dragon's long-term domicile, it might be more likely to get something from that. But they recently moved in. They weren't a nuisance in the area, and then suddenly they became one, which means they weren't there before. So the question then is, well, where were they before? They put up the wards to prevent scrying right after they were discovered. So there's not a whole lot to go on. However, you happen to be a member of FLAG, who has a lot of representatives in a lot of locales. And you're taking this quest from one of the founding members. So additional investigation might be doable with some pooled strings. I'm going to say, give me an investigation roll, but wait, don't roll it yet, because I want to look at some things on your character sheet first. And it'll start off as investigation, but it's going to be at disadvantage because of the complexity of this. And yeah, we're not going to modify it in any other way. So just investigation at disadvantage. I am aware that your investigation has plus 13.
Also, I will not be rolling it at disadvantage, because investigation is an intelligence check, and I have a puzzler's wit.
A ring of puzzler's wit. The gold ring bears a fluorite stone and is enchanted to sharpen the wearer's mind. Mo has mixed feelings about this. It does allow him to get transmissions in 4K, but also you've been in some fights where he didn't need that high resolution.
And why is it not spending? Oh, well.
Well, you're going to have a long rest before the next time you use this, most likely. So we're not going to worry about that so much. Roll your investigation at plus 13 because you are a high level bard.
Bards know how to get information.
That is a 5 on the die, and you got an 18.
And I may spend my luck points to try to get better.
Ran is sitting over there using telekinesis, other going, yeah, that's how you do it.
I cannot figure out how to spend my luck points. There we go. I just remove the number of them.
Yeah, that's because we're shoehorning in Tales of the Valiant's luck point system. The only way I figured out how to do it easily, well, somewhat easily, is by just having an item in your inventory called luck points. And I'm saying this not for the players here, but for anyone who might be listening. That's how you do that in D&D. That's also how Chadrick has 5,000 fantasy Hilton points currently.
There we go, 23. Because Cavil, despite being a bardlock, has something in common with wizards, and that thing is preparation. And a high intelligence modifier. So, two things.
Okay. With a 23, you are given a small glass vial. And at first, it looks empty. But when you hold it up to a light and shake it, there is the smallest, tiniest speck of a black... Well, first it looks like a splinter. Like you've pulled something like this out of a finger more than once when adventuring. It is a small fragment of a black dragon scale. Not enough to craft anything out of it, but that's not what you intend to do, is it?
Nope. And I am hoping that if I am not, say, teleporting, which is a spell I do not have, that something belonging to the primary occupant of the location will count as close enough to being from the location for me to find the location.
It's worth an attempt, at the very least. So tell me about this spell you're casting.
Well,
This is your only 6th level spell, which amuses me more.
Yes, it is. This spell allows you to find the shortest, most direct physical route to a specific fixed location that you are familiar with on the same plane of existence. If you name a destination on another plane of existence, a destination that moves, such as a mobile fortress, or a destination that isn't specific, such as a green dragon's lair, the spell fails. For the duration, as long as you are on the same plane of existence as the destination, you know how far it is and in what direction it lies. While you are traveling there, whenever you are presented with a choice of paths along the way, you automatically determine which path is the shortest and most direct route, but not necessarily the safest route, to the destination.
And it's a concentration spell for up to a day. Casting time is 1 minute. So this sounds like a thing that you would ask to be sent by member services to the Gore Swamp outside of Coombridge before you sit down to cast this spell. But
that
at this
would be
point,
accurate.
You have, yes. You could cast it now and just say, it's that way, as you point to the south.
And indeed, I could probably continue concentrating until we actually got to that area, but that seems kind of unnecessary.
It's rather convoluted. But also, now that you have the spell, you have this spell, you understand the various adventuring parties where somebody did stand up and point in a random direction and say, it's that way. because apparently more than one person has done this. It also explains the facepalming that happened from the rest of the party members when someone did that. Although in several cases, everyone just got up and ran out the building. And in one case, somebody ran into another room that came out with a missing sock.
That was probably locate object.
One would hope. I cast a 6th-level spell to find a sock. To be fair, locate object might not work for missing socks. Those things are usually gone. I don't understand. I cast find the path to find the missing sock, and the spell failed. It's on another plane of existence, you know. Oh.
I mean, Dryers.
Dryers are portals to a bag of devouring, not bag of holding. Okay. And at this point, I would like to resolve what Ellie is doing with Mox and the Suboptimals. That sounds like a band name. But we've been playing for well over an hour, almost an hour and a half. And Ellie has had to step away unexpectedly. So we're going to take a short pause. What do you say?
Sounds good.
And we're back. And Dirge, Fori, and Kurg, the three amigos, down from four, who are the remains of the Suboptimals, a band that was originally four CLs. Then they went down to three CLs and took on a healer who happened to be a bard, who ended up to be being there on false pretenses, but we've already covered that. Well, now they're down to three again. Dirge is the rogue, Fori is the cleric, and Kurg is the fighter. The three of them are sitting at a corner table, looking rather glum. They don't want to do another fetch quest. They don't want to kill 10 rats. And frankly, the quests to go and kill kobolds in the sewers are rather insulting to everyone involved, so those quests aren't even offered at Flag anymore. So,
good.
They're just sitting there with some empty mugs at the table over in the corner as Tex and Mox walk in.
Tex will stop by the bar and pick up refills for the group before she goes to the table with Mox.
Okay. Mox also gets a drink from the bar. It is a glass of milk with strawberry syrup in it.
Aww.
Tex will pay for it.
Oh, you didn't have to do that, but thank you.
I do not eat or drink. I find it pleasant to be able to enable others to do so.
I feel sorry for you. Strawberry milk is delicious.
I shall enjoy it vicariously.
Also, it's apparently really good for healthy teeth. I go through a lot of those.
Understandably. Kurg. Dirge. How are you today?
Dirge looks over at you and Dirge is in the process of saying, is that supposed to be a... And then sees that it's you. You fought side by side before. On more than one occasion. So...
Yes.
Dirge stops asking if that's a joke. Getting by. How can we help you?
First, I have brought you replacement drinks.
And I apologize. I used Kurg's voice for Dirge. I shouldn't have done that. There's going to be one person who's really a big fan of the show who goes, wait a minute. But that'll be like 5 years from now when we have one fan. Working towards it. That's not true. We have several fans. They are Patreon patrons, and we thank you so much for that. So all three of them thank you for the drinks to various levels of enthusiasm. Kurg will down half of it and then set it back down on the table. Dirge and Fori they appear to be more the kind of person that will sip their beverage and make it last a lot longer.
May I introduce you to my friend Mox?
Hi!
Now, from their perspective, they see the top of an alligator head and a little hand come up and wave. The head bobs up and down.
Flag must have chairs that allow kobolds and other similarly small size category characters to sit level with the table.
Yes, you can ask for a booster seat if you want one. They just don't happen to have one at this table right now because the three of them are medium size. So after jumping up and down a couple of times, Mox does go over to another chair that's at the table and climbs up it to stand on it to be able to be seen.
Oh, hello. My name is Mox, and I am a paladin.
And
Mox is a very good paladin.
Stare.
Mox is between teams at the moment. I thought perhaps you could get acquainted.
When you say this, there is canonically a moment where all four of them just sort of like stare at each other. Like, okay, what do we do now? Kirk says, so what do you do if you're fighting a purple worm?
Well, the first idea would probably be to not fight the purple worm, because it's really, really big and could eat even a really big person like Tex here if you're just like right in front of it. So probably using its environment against it with, you know, possibly some traps and stuff, luring it into a location for ambush, that would probably work.
Okay. You made your case. Good idea. And Dirge says, so you don't rush into battle. That's good. But what if one of us is down?
Well, I can lay hands on people. Actually, wait, no, that's an HR thing. I can lay on hands. That's the terminology. Oh, I got that question wrong on the correspondence course test. The very important,
And Ace, not A, Mox starts wringing his hands.
Sorry. Hi, I'm Mox. I'm a paladin, and I'm looking for some friends.
Before he speaks up. Well, Mox, hi. We're the suboptimals. We could use some more friends. The rest of the conversation that happens is more along the lines of what they're going to do next and what quests they might want to take off of the board as a means of not initiation, but perhaps the adventuring party's version of a session zero.
Aww. Shakedown cruise. See how everybody works together.
As soon as she sees that they're in the middle of their planning session, Tex will nod and start walking off.
A little while later, Mox finds you and runs up to you again.
Is Tex, ma'am? Why did you do that?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the first word of that.
Why did you help me?
Tex is genuinely pondering the question. Because you needed help.
Thank you. You're a good person.
You are very welcome. I have not always been, but I try to be.
I haven't always been a good person either. Kobold and all, you know. But
indeed.
Our past makes us who we are, but we aren't our past. And you are a good person.
I am learning that. And I am grateful to have the reinforcement. Thank you.
I read it in a book once. Speaking of that.
And Mox rummages around in a bag of definitely not holding, because Mox's arm cannot go all the way in.
I don't have a whole lot, but I wanted to say thank you. And this, I think it has a little bit of use left. It might be helpful. Here.
And Mox hands you a battered, rather thick, what appears to be a magazine or journal. Appears to be a scientific journal. But imagine, if you will, a scientific journal that's been handwritten, possibly with things spilled on it more than once. And are those singe marks? Yeah, it looks like it's singed in one place, too. I will add Chroma's out-of-date science journal to your inventory. A wondrous, uncommon magic item that, if I remember correctly, does have... let me read this, actually. Because I do have it written up, I just don't have it added to a character sheet yet. You may use this journal to explain a scientific principle that will allow you or an ally to treat a failed save as a successful save, or to take a successful save where damage would be reduced by half and instead take no damage at all. As the owner of the journal, it is your responsibility to describe the science, and there's quotes there, behind why this effect takes place. But your proposed theory can be 100% fictional, and you are encouraged to make it as fanciful as possible. For the period of time where the saving throw is relevant, the laws of the universe conform to your outdated theory, at least in regards to the target making the saving throw. After the results of the saving throw are resolved, the Science Journal's publisher issues a retraction, and this issue ceases to be effective. This is not a book written by Chroma, famed moon-dwelling kobold adventurer and inventor, so much as it is a periodical to which Chroma was subscribed.
Thank you. I shall treasure it and use it well.
Something tells me you're going to need to use it soonish. Just a feeling.
Then I appreciate it all the more. I will let you get back to your strawberry milk, my new friend. I hope your adventures are fun.
Same to you.
Thank you.
And with that, they nod and scurry off back to their new friends.
Aww.
And I think that's where we're going to end it for tonight. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, everyone, for playing. Tonight, I was joined by three awesome people, Beth, Ellie, and Io. Would anyone like to plug a thing?
Io's mom writes books at ElizabethMcCoy.com. Hmm? Yes.
Of this, book. I am reliably informed.
Indeed. And give them a shop. Give them a look over. You can sample half of the novels generally at the Smashwords link, and you can ask your library to buy the ebooks, and then you can read them for free entirely if you want, and the library pays me, so I'm happy, and I get to feed my cats, and I get to help other people sometimes, you know, make like their heating payments and stuff. And speaking of fun things,
well, if Jen was here, they would tell us about bookofjen.net and shatteredsoulstone.com. But they are on again, off again, under the weather. And the stars are just not aligning. So we are hoping that they get a speedy recovery from the everything. Also, speaking of other cool things, if I am allowed to toot my own horn, which is weird because I was a percussionist. I didn't play a horn. AaronBSmith.com is where I put all the things that I do, which does not include percussion anymore or horn playing. But it does include podcasting. You can find this podcast and many others. You can also follow us on the Fediverse, is.aaronbsmith.com/@cogwheel. And we have a Patreon, patreon.com/cogwheelgaming, where you can help us keep the lights on along with other illustrious patrons, including Ellie, Shanshan, Walter, Liv Drummond, and Patron Emeritus Cindy. And until next time, this is Crash saying, why did I feel like Tex was going to need to use that book soon? Good night, everybody.